We present great stories from around the globe by some of the world's favorite writers in Springbok Library of the Air.
The House of Usher. During the whole of a dull, dark, and noisome day in the autumn of a year that now seems long ago, when the clouds hung oppressively low in the heavens, I had been passing alone on horseback through a singularly dreary tract of country, and at length found myself, as the shades of evening drew on, within view of the melancholy House of Usher. I reined in my horse on the precipitous brink of a black and lurid lake that lay by the dwelling, and gazed down. The house was obviously of excessive antiquity, discolored by the ages, and with minute fungi overspreading the whole exterior. And as I looked at it, there grew in my mind a strange fancy. It seemed to me that about the whole mansion, with its blank walls, its vacant, eyeless windows, there hung an atmosphere which had no affinity with earth or heaven, but which reeked up from the few ghastly white decaying trees, from the silent tarn and those fungus-hung walls. A pestilent and mystic vapor, dull, sluggish, leaden-hued. What was it? What was it that unnerved me in the contemplation of the House of Usher? As I entered the Gothic archway of the Great Hall, I was met by a servant.
If you will come this way, sir, the master is awaiting you in the studio.
Thank you. This must be a very ancient house.
Indeed it is, sir. The House of Usher has stood for many centuries.
So it would seem.
Ah, there you are, my good man. I ordered my horse to be ready and I... Oh, I beg your pardon. This hall is so dim, I did not see you, sir.
Doctor, this gentleman...
I thought someone was expected. You were a friend of the Ushers?
I am. And who might you be?
I am the Usher family physician, sir. And if by any chance you happen to be some new doctor he has called in, I warn you, the Lady Madeline is my patient, and I shall brook no interference.
Set your mind at rest, sir. I am no rival. I am simply an old friend. Now, if you will excuse me...
Oh, forgive me, sir. You do understand. The Lady Madeline's condition, well, it has attracted quite some medical interest, you see. And this house is not accustomed to the visits of friends. I do beg your pardon.
I understand. Come, my good man. Your master is waiting for me.
This way, sir.
The family physician, huh?
He attends the Lady Madeline, sir. The master's sister.
Ah, yes, Lady Madeline.
Her ladyship has been ill for some years. In here, sir.
Ushered was large and lofty, and lit only by feeble and crimsoned rays from the long narrow windows. A man was sitting in the shadows, plucking at the strings of a guitar. The cadaverous emaciation of his features, his ghastly pallor, the wild luster of his eyes, made me doubt his identity. Surely in a few years no man could change so terribly.
My dear fellow, my dear, dear fellow... Oh, how can I express my pleasure at seeing you?
I came as soon as I received your letter, Roderick.
Oh, did it sound so wildly importunate? Forgive me, I had to have you here. You were my only real friend. Even after so many years, the only friend I can turn to. I need you. Oh, how I need you.
In your letter, you spoke of acute bodily illness and
a mental... disorder. Look at me. Do you doubt it?
Certainly you don't look yourself. You have changed, but... What has happened? I remember you were never very strong, but... But this... Surely it is a physician and not me you need most.
I remember your cheerfulness. And I need your cheerfulness.
If you need cheering, old man, why sit in this great gloomy room?
Because I can't stand the lights. It's torture, torture. Any sound... Except this guitar fills me with horror. Can you understand?
I will try, my friend.
I'm sorry. Come, I shall introduce you to the house of Usher. Look, out here are all these portraits, my forebears. All of them, all men of peculiar sensibility. Artists, musicians, poets from time out of mind. Passionate, sensitive men. And all their sensibility and passion and nervous affection are now reposed in my sister and me. The last, the sum total, the heirs of centuries. We are the House of Usher. And it is us. That is why I can never leave it. Soon she will not be able even to stagger down these dark corridors. Soon she will be able to fight no more.
That is the Lady Madeline.
Come, she could not bear for you to see her.
But surely is there nothing that can be done?
Nothing. Her illness baffles the doctors.
You mean they simply wait for her death? I met a doctor in the hall.
You saw him. Would you doubt my estimation of him?
Is this, then, the cause of your melancholy?
It is part of it. Part of the entire ghastly horror. Oh, no, but not all. Look, down there, the great staircase, the hall. Look, outside this window. Can't you sense it? That fearful miasma. It saturates the whole house, the stones, the tower, the water of that awful black tarn. Don't you feel this atmosphere of hopelessness and doom? Isn't it laid on your heart like an icy hand?
Oh, come
on. You feel it as a normal being. Imagine how I feel it when every sense is like an exposed nerve.
Roderick, you must leave this place. Get away from these awful fancies.
Fancies? You think them fancies? Look! Out there! I have not crossed that causeway for years. I cannot leave this house because in some ghastly way it has tied me to it as it tied my family. And I know now that it is evil. This house is possessed of evil that has for centuries cursed my family and now moves towards its complete dissolution. You wonder at my fear. There is no escape for me. I know the House of Usher in me is to perish entirely. And I know it will die of terror.
I shall ever bear the memory of the many solemn days I spent with the master of the House of Usher. The glimpse I had had of the Lady Madeline was the last I was to have in her life. For during that evening of my arrival, the strange malady which was so slowly destroying her at last finally confined her to bed. Throughout the following days, Usher never mentioned her name. And I busied myself trying to alleviate the melancholy and strange fancies that seemed to possess him entirely. We painted and read together. And I listened as in a dream to his interminable improvisations on the guitar. But it seemed nothing could give him release. And soon I bitterly understood the futility of all attempts at cheering a mind from which darkness poured forth in one unceasing radiation of gloom and inexpressible fears. Then one evening, suddenly, abruptly, he told me the Lady Madeline had died.
Quietly, they say. Thank heaven she died quietly.
Oh, my dear fellow, I am deeply sorry. Deeply sorry.
At least she has escaped the horror that will be mine. You hear that, you spirits? She's escaped you. And I swear her rest will be peaceful. I swear no one shall disturb her grave. Do you hear me?
Do you really believe the doctors?
The doctors? Ghouls, frustrated ghouls. Do you believe they would shrink from desecrating their grave to satisfy their morbid curiosity? But I'll not let them. Our family burial ground is remote and isolated. She'll not rest there. There are vaults beneath this house where she shall rest secure from them all.
Oh, come now, Roderick. You don't propose to interview your sister yourself. Naturally, I understand your grief,
if
but I...
If you are my friend, you will help me. Do you think my fears are so unnatural? You saw that doctor, that incompetent. Please, I need your help. Help me bury her. Help me.
I knew it was futile to oppose him further. He led me to the apartment where the body lay already uncoffined, and together we bore it down towards the vaults beneath the mansion. It seemed the vault to which my friend led me lay at great depth, immediately beneath that portion of the building in which was my own sleeping apartment. As we climbed carefully down the damp steps with our grim burden, our torches spluttered in the oppressive atmosphere. The vault that we entered was small, damp, and entirely without light. Indeed, it had long been unopened, so that the torches were half smothered.
Careful. Hold the torch steady.
This looks like some ghastly sort of prison.
So it was in feudal days. Later it served as a powder arsenal. See, it's encased in copper. Hardly an elegant resting place for my sister, but at least she'll be safe and at peace. There's a trestle yonder. Can you see it?
Yes, well, we best hurry. These torches will soon be out.
Careful.
Now, let's get out of this fearful place.
No, no. Wait. I must look on her dear face once more.
Roderick, please.
A moment. I've not screwed down the lid. Rest in peace, dear sister. Rest in peace.
She seems only to sleep. The smile on her lips. The blush still on her cheek. How strange.
That is the hideous irony of her malady.
Now, the resemblance, it is most remarkable, the resemblance between the two of you.
Hardly remarkable. She was my twin.
For some days, Roderick Usher's grief was overwhelming, until suddenly an extraordinary change seemed to come over him. He roamed from chamber to chamber of that great house with hurried, objectiveless step. Then at times I would notice him gazing into vacancy for long hours in an attitude of profoundest attention, as if he were listening to some horror beyond my knowledge. Is it any wonder that his condition now began to infect and terrify me? It was the seventh or eighth night after the Lady Madeline's burial that I felt this strange, causeless alarm and incipient terror. I tossed on my bed. An irrepressible tremor pervaded my frame. I shook this off with a struggle and, lifting myself upon the pillows, tried to peer into the intense darkness of the room, while some instinct prompted me to listen. It seemed that over the storm I could hear sounds, eerie, indefinite sounds. Overpowered by an intense sentiment of horror, I lit a lamp and threw on my clothes. Then suddenly...
Oh, who's there?
Oh. Oh, it's you, Roderick.
Have you seen this? Have you?
Seen what?
Look, out there, out the window.
For heaven's sake, come away from this. Shut the window, that air will kill you.
See it?
Roderick, shut the window.
You saw it, didn't you? Light, that weird light.
It's a sign, you know.
A sign?
Yes, I saw it. Now, come away from the window. Certainly, it looked frightening, but it's merely an electrical phenomenon. It's not uncommon during a storm, or it may have its origins in the rank miasma from the lake. That's all it is.
If only I could believe that.
In your condition, you could catch a fever from that air. Here. Sit down. Put this rug about you.
Edgar, please. Please don't leave me alone tonight.
For heaven's sake, man, take hold of yourself. It's only the storm. I'm afraid it has unsettled me also. I dare say neither of us will sleep any more tonight. Here, this should calm you. I've been reading a favorite book of yours, Mad Trist by Sir Lancelot Canning. I'll read, you listen. Now forget the storm and forget your fantasies, and the night will be over in no time. Now, let's see, this is the chapter I've been reading. It's where Ethelred comes to
listen.
The...
Listen!
It's only the storm. Now, Ethelred is seeking admission to the hermit's hut and is refused. Then it goes on. He waited no longer to parley, but feeling the rain upon his shoulders, he uplifted his mace and with great blows made quickly room in the plankings of the door.
Listen. You hear that?
In the plankings of the door. He hacked and hewed, then pulling sturdily, he so cracked and ripped that the dry and hollow sounding wood alarmed and reverberated throughout the house. But on entering within the door, the good champion was amazed to perceive no signal of the maliceful hermit. But there stood a dragon of prodigious demeanor and fiery tongue. Above him on the wall hung the great brazen shield, which of a sudden fell down at his feet with a great and mighty and terrible clangor. And Ethelred uplifted his mace and struck upon the head of the dragon, which fell before him with a shriek so horrid and harsh and piercing that Ethelred had to close his ears. You heard?
Yes, I heard. I've heard it for so long. So long, so many hours and days.
Days?
Yes, days.
Didn't I tell you my senses were acute?
You heard that hewing and hacking, that ripping and tearing. You heard that ghastly scream. But I tell you, I heard the first feeble movement in the coffin.
Movement? What are you saying?
That I dared not.
I dared not speak.
What do you mean? My sister. We put her in that tomb.
Alive? What? It's not true. It can't be. You're mad.
Yes. Yes, I am.
And where shall I find? Isn't she now on the way up here to upbraid me for haste? For committing her to a living death? Don't I already hear her foot on the stairs? Listen.
It's the storm, the thunder, your fevered imagination. Roderick, listen to me. There is nothing. You hear? There is nothing, only the storm.
It isn't the storm. I can hear already the heavy beating of her heart. She's there, I tell you. At this moment, she stands beyond that door. Madeline!
There in the doorway stood the enshrouded figure of the Lady Madeline, with evidence of her bitter struggle upon her emaciated frame. For a moment she stood, then fell as in her death agony, bearing to the floor the body of her brother, a victim of the terror he had anticipated. From that chamber, from that mansion, I fled aghast while still I was able. I found myself crossing the causeway. Suddenly a gleam of light came from behind me, where there was only the vast shadow of the house. I stopped, as though impaled upon that eerie beam. Then I turned and saw it was the blood-red moon shining through the fissures in the wall that now split the entire house from roof to base. While I gazed, the fissure widened, and there came a fierce breath of the whirlwind. The entire orb of the moon came upon my sight, and I saw the mighty walls falling asunder to crash into tumultuous ruin. As I watched, the deep, dank tarn at my feet closed suddenly and silently over the sundered fragments. And the House of Usher was no more.
listen again next week for another unforgettable story from our Springbok Library of the Air.